5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, there we have it. Didn't catch the title of the song. It was Elvis Costello and the Attractions. I did really. It was radio, one of my favourites. I'm a big, big Elvis Costello fan. God bless him. God bless him. So, if you've just joined us, it is the new Panic Room, episode 157, and it is September the something or other, September the 12th. Jeez, wow, yeah, it only seems like yesterday. It'll be soon for Christmas again, so that's something to really look forward to. So, anywho, I've missed her. I know we don't really speak much these days. I think she's fell out of me, but I'm going to bring her on.
Come on, I'm with you.
How are you this evening?
I'm
you're not supposed to cheer for yourself.
Friday.
I mean, that's...
You heard that, did you? It's been a day.
It has been a day. I think we've both had one of them days today. So
I'm glad
here we are. You know, it always cheers us up. We get ourselves on the show and it sort of cheers up a little bit. You know, it certainly cheers me up.
Yeah, and then tomorrow's Friday, so that's even more to cheer about. So we're good. We're good. We got this.
Right, James,
you know,
bed, to be honest with you.
You know, we just got a little while more, and we can go to bed. But, you know, okay, you start to play my song.
Not we. No, let's just clarify that. Not we.
Yeah, for all of our listeners out there,
we're separate beds, hundreds of miles apart.
In different states and everything. Yeah. So, you start to play this song, and I remember I used to, like, you know, shake my head and go, oh, dear God, you know, everyone, because of, you know, the dueling banjos. And and then I think about just the other day, I have this this app on my phone that is, like, about the neighborhood, like people from our neighborhood post in it and stuff. And I got an email the other day. So I get an email the other day, and I look at it, and it says, has anybody lost a cow? And I'm thinking, you know, it fits in perfect now. I mean, what can I say now? You know, there's a cow running loose around the neighborhood. And so you don't hear that all the time. Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny. So I'm keeping an eye on the conversation just because it's, you know, it's so funny. And as a matter of fact, one of the other, you know, posters, you know, after that was like, this whole thread is just cracking me up. And it was me too. I mean, people are talking about the cow. It's running loose. That's just strange.
Well,
it's funny, on our
local app, it's always, did somebody hear the gunshots? Or what's going on at so-and-so? Because there's a lot of cop cars. And there was one this morning. There's a dead body found in a ditch not too far from here. So it's a lot of that. Well, it's gone back a few months now. There was the gas station on the corner was robbed and the cashier was killed. So I think they've just caught somebody.
Wow.
You have loose cows and we have you know, shootings and shit. So.
Yeah, like the highlight here for the last 3 weeks it's been the cow and the fact that people are driving faster than 25 miles an hour, and it's posted that it's 25 miles per hour. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Mate.
So those are the highlights.
anywho, since last week's show, I don't think you've been yet. We went to see It Part Two.
Have you seen it? No, not yet. I know it was.
You need to go and see it. It's good. It's good. It went on a little bit long for it's nearly 3 hours. It kept me and the kids entertained for nearly 3 hours. I mean, it's good. It's good. You know, there's bits from the book and. Oh, excuse me. That's it. Good night.
You're not kidding.
It's been a good show. Thank you. Good night. I would recommend it. The first one was good. This obviously was recaps and what have you, which probably adds to the time, but. It's good, you know, there's some nice set pieces from the book and, you know, they got the characters nailed really, really well. Yeah. And whoever did their
That's
cast,
what I, like.
I mean, the match between, you know, because the kids were in it, got flashbacks and what have you. You know, the match between the kids and their grown-up counterparts was phenomenal. There's even the kid, Ben, the fat kid. He grows up and he's not fat and he's a gorgeous, successful architect bloke. And even that, you could tell, even before they said it was, you could tell him. And from this little fat kid to this, and it was just, wow, you know, for them to have done that was amazing. And it's always
nice
to see James McAvoy, who's a British actor, and Jessica Chastain, and Stephen has an awesome cameo in it as well. he's known for having small cameras. He's quite a big part, but he does really, really well. So go see it.
Boyfriend, I know you're listening, so there you go. We have to go see this movie. No, I've been looking at the people posting about it, and I've seen mostly people are saying that it's good and go see it. I've seen a very, very few saying it's garbage. But yeah, mostly they're saying it's really good.
No,
and
it's not, I wouldn't say. No, I mean, no. The Pet Sematary remake was poor.
Oh,
but
that was awful.
No, it is good. There's some genuine scary moments in it and some funny moments. Funny enough, my daughter, you know, she was chuckling away because there's some really nice funny bits in it. Yeah, just genuinely, you know, those little dark comedy bits and what have you. And some of the banter between Richie and one of the other characters, I can't remember which one. It's brilliant, beautifully written.
I think that's what I liked most about the part one, was just I loved the interaction with the kids. I mean, that was great. That was my favorite part of it. So
is followed through, which is great because it, you know, rather than just being all gloom and scary and what have you, just that nice little juxtaposition, some dark humor in it, it was good. It was good.
Yeah, I definitely want to go see it. So hopefully we'll be able to talk about it next week. Yes, yes, he's listening. So.
No, don't let him drag you to see Rambo because that'd just be rubbish. that would be rubbish. It'd just be the same as all the others. Well, somebody upsets him, and he goes on the rampage, makes some clever little. It's sort of like Home Alone for grown-ups, isn't it? Home Alone for, you know, kids who want to play with guns, you know, and it's like, don't.
You know, at the end of the last season of The Orville, I was, you know, I had been complaining, oh, God, he's making me watch The Orville again. Well, you know, over the past couple of weeks, he's been re-watching the whole show, like season one, season two.
Oh, really?
And,
oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. So I, you know, I'm catching it here and there, and I'm watching it a little bit as I'm working and stuff, and, okay, fine. I don't hate it anymore. I hate the fact that I don't hate it because it's just, you know, it that would be the last thing I would choose to watch, you know, if I was to pick out a show.
I absolutely enjoyed it. It's got I think there's definitely going to be a third season, but it's great. Mm-hmm. It's great. You know, I'm a big Seth MacFarlane fan, but not a fan of his live action stuff. But that is absolutely nailed it. It is incredibly well done. So, in fact, the only thing that lets it down a little bit is when it just tries to be funny, tries to put some comedy in it, and it just doesn't work. I mean, the original Star Trek series, you know, they had some inadvertently, and they had some funny bits in it, but it just tries to. I think with the second season, it sort of moved away from that, and it's just a damn good sci-fi show. So
you know, the episodes I've seen, I'm just they always just felt a little spoofy for me, and I was just never a fan. Like even when it comes to horror, the spoof movies, I'm not a fan of those. Horror or, you know, serious something. So Firefly.
Some of them, Shaun of the Dead was, I guess, it's comedy horror, but that was done so incredibly well. But these were, they try to, I think maybe it's the American spooks that, you know, they just try too hard. And you can't, comedy horror just doesn't, as a general rule, with one or two exceptions. Mm-hmm. I mean, Zombieland, for example.
Zombieland, yes.
And Zombieland 2 is out, I think, next month. Hurrah! General rule, it doesn't work, so just don't do it. Don't make them.
I am actually looking really way like crazy forward to Zombieland 2.
Saw the trailer at the movies and like we want to see that.
yes. I think we should go see that at the same night. You guys and we'll go see it and then we'll be able to talk about it.
Must do that. I think that'll be one we go to see at the movies. But do we have anything going on tonight? I've not read the schedule or anything. I don't know what's going on. What have we got on tonight, Xtina?
We have a great show tonight. We have horror author and host of the cable TV show The Taco Society Presents, Tony Tremblay. Is it Tremblay or Tremblay? I like Tremblay.
Tremblay.
Yeah, yeah. And then later on in the show, we have audiobook narrator Chris Harbour. And
awesome. He's one of my favorites. He's narrated a lot for us. So excellent. Without further ado, as people still say, educated, supposedly intelligent people still say that. Not people, just not. Anyway, without further ado, he said, ironic. Introduce our first guest, Xtina.
Okay,
if you're not bothered, I do like it when you join in, all right? You know?
Okay.
Nice.
Horror author and host of the cable TV show The Taco Society Presents, Tony Tremblay. Woo!
Good evening, sir.
That's some audience you have there. Hello.
They're all crammed into my studio here. So and they're a lively bunch. I think I've told this story before. When I was a small child, and we used to listen to usually the top 20 in my day. You know, the hit parade, the top 20. And I honestly thought, up until probably about the age my daughter is now, I honestly thought that they had all the bands in the studio. And they would all play their song.
That's more fun to think of it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny when I found
And by the way, I agree with you on it, too. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Yeah. It was. Paul Eckstein feels left out now.
I do.
How did you compare with the first episode?
How would I compare it? I love the first one, but I actually like the second one better. I thought there were a lot more scares. I thought the humor really hit the horror home. It was just, I just really enjoyed the whole thing. The very end, it was a little weak, but, you know, aside from that, I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, I would agree. But it was one, I think I've said this about the book, you know, I mean, for me, the book, the end of the book was a bit disappointing. It felt like a bit of a cop-out, but the getting there, you know, getting to know the characters and the backstories, was phenomenal. I think next to Salem's Lot, I think it has to be, you know, my second favorite King novel, I think, of all time.
I would say the same here. You talk about his endings; it was a running joke through the movie.
It was, wasn't it? There was...
Yeah.
Well, I was saying about his Stephen King cameo. You know, even he made a reference I didn't like the endings. You know, it's like brilliant.
Exactly.
Absolutely brilliant. You know.
People say that a lot about his endings, though. They really do. And you know, I've read a lot of Stephen King books, and it does seem like he just gets to a point where he's like, "Oh man, I'm tired of this. I'm just going to wrap it up." You know.
He doesn't. He gets to a point where he could wrap it up. It's, "Oh, I'm going to squeeze another 500 pages out of this," you know. And it's like, it's almost like it has been said, you know, he doesn't know, you know, how when to end, you know, and just keep, sometimes it. I mean, to be fair, you could have probably cut the last 10, 15 minutes off it too, and it still have been an awesome movie. I don't think it added an awful lot to it. It's kind of wraps you up with a bit of schmaltz, but
does in almost every one of his books.
Yeah.
his endings just go on and on and on. And
well, that's why I like the early ones. I mean, you look at Salem's Lot, you look at Carrie, you look at The Dead Zone again, which was a phenomenal book and a good movie. Firestarter, even Christine. I mean, all, you know, good rounded books. They finished well, finished strong, you know. So he did know how to do it. He did know.
It was his later books where I think he got a little wordy.
Yeah.
I heard that they're making The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. Was it you, James, who sent me something about that?
I did. I sent you the link. Whether it's true or not, I don't. In fact, I followed the link on on Facebook yesterday. I think there's like at least 10, maybe 12 Stephen King book stories in movie production. So
I would love to see what they would do with The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, but then again, I kind of wonder how they would do it. But, you know, I wonder the same thing with Gerald's Game, and that turned out that was so much better than I thought. I mean, I loved the book so much.
Yeah.
But knowing that so much it took place in her head, I was like, how are they going to bring this to life and make it into a good movie? But they did a great job with it.
Tony is a star of TV, which I'm dying to hear all about, actually. And he talks about his book, Blue Stars and Other Tales of Darkness. So what do you want to talk about first, Tony? Your TV stardom?
Well, it's not TV star. We can talk about that. It's basically a cable show that's I live in New England, in New Hampshire. And what the show is, it's an interview show, much like what you do here. But what we focus on is New England horror genre authors. So people would come down to the studios. We'd film for an hour to 2 hours, have one or two guests, again, doing like what you're doing, and just talk to them and get them to talk about their books.
Oh, fantastic. But you do that. See, we couldn't do TV because both Xena and I, present this show naked. And to be honest, trust me, Tony,
nobody wants to see that.
Nobody wants to see that. No one.
But we did that for a while, and the ratings went down. We learned our lesson real quick, so we put our clothes back on.
So some people have no sense of occasion.
No.
It was a good time. Go ahead.
So how long have you been doing the show?
Oh, we ended it, I ended it actually last May. We've been doing it for 3 years, and we may go back to it. But yeah, I just thought it was. We did 50 episodes. I just thought it was time to stop it for a while. You do something so long, it doesn't become fun anymore. It becomes a job. And when that happens, you tend to lose your enthusiasm. And even though the guests were great and the co-hosts were fine, I just said, this is getting to be a little bit too much. I'm just going to take a break for a while. And I have.
Yeah, no, good for you. I've said the same thing. If I get to the point where this isn't fun anymore, then I'm just going to not bother.
That's exactly what you should do.
Yeah, we're still enjoying it. It's kind of.
Yeah.
I think we lead such sad, empty lives. This is actually the highlight of our week, so, which I think says more about the emptiness of our souls than it does about the show, to tell you the truth.
As a result of the TV show, they asked me to host another show coming this fall, I believe, or winter, as a host of a movie show where they would show old movies, and they'd ask me to introduce the movies, talk a little bit about it during intermission, and then recap it when it was over. I'll still be in the TV game. Yeah, it should
Excellent.
Be a lot of fun.
That sounds terrific. I would love to do something like that. So if anybody's listening out there.
Where do you live, James?
I'm in Houston.
Houston, okay.
Not, you wouldn't think that by the accent, but so yeah, I'm in Houston. Yeah,
right.
So, yeah.
But when you talked about your neighborhood app and all the murders and the gunshots, I say, where the hell does that guy live?
Well, honestly, we live in a respectable suburb, northwest of Houston. We're just outside the city limits, actually, but this is all suburbia and everything. But yeah, there's always somebody getting. I think it's Texas, though. So
it's not a fun place lately.
I'd rather runaway cows than. They found another corpse just literally down the street, and somebody's been shot, and literally at least on a weekly basis, there's somebody, you know, did you was it fireworks or was it gunshots? It's like, oh dear.
Yeah, my son went to go take a walk today, and you know, I was joking around. You need to bring your mace with you. Why is it dangerous out there? Well, there's like, you know, a loose cow. You know, you keep like
a loose cow. Yeah.
I live in New Hampshire, in kind of in the woods, not in a city, but I live woods around me, and we get moose and deer, all sorts of in the backyard. It's fun, but it can be a little nerve wracking. We had a huge bear, sitting in a tree right across the street.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is awesome. We get possums and raccoons and that sort of thing, but that'll be great now.
Uh-huh.
Some of those kicking about.
Wildlife, we had a skunk the other night. Well, I think it was like a week ago, and I don't think it actually sprayed the animals. I think it like jumped, but it sprayed into the air, and one of the stupid dogs, I think, just like walked into it. And, I swear I'm the only one who still smells it, but I'm like, you know, anytime the dog comes near me, I'm like, I'm sorry, sweetie, but go away, you know. But man, you know, I had smelled some bad things before, and I swear I had smelled skunk, but there's a difference between normal skunk smell and skunk spray. Oh, this was so bad. I still can't even get over how awful it was.
Ew.
I know.
Well, they get hit on the roads around here. You can smell them for miles. You know, when you have somebody sit a skunk and you just, it's eye watering. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not
it's
fun.
It's pretty bad.
So you can get them as pets, actually. The Saint Lands out. And there are people you can actually have them as little pets. Which is
I think I'd pass on that.
I draw the line as skunk, I think.
Although you have a ferret, aren't they like?
We have a ferret.
Similar.
I mean, I don't think they're the same gen. They're sort of related. You know, they're related to polecats and obviously something like that. And they come de-centered and spade and everything, and she's an absolute delight. One of the best pets I've ever had, actually. She's great, and her tummy smells of Fritos, so I like something. Just my thing.
That's a weird thing.
I will
for,
go into my daughter's room and get the ferret out and just sniff its tummy. Moving on. So, Tony, Blue Stars and Other Tales of Darkness. Tell us about the book.
That's my latest book. I've got that's my second collection. The first one was called The Seeds and Nightmares, and that did very well. The second one was called The Morehouse, and that's a full novel, and that was nominated for a Bram Stoker Award.
Congratulations.
I went down to the ceremony. Yes, thank you very much. I didn't win, but but I was one of the five nominated. Yeah,
that is a heck of an achievement. Yeah, well done.
Yeah. And that was published by Havel House Publishing, who's doing some fantastic work. Aside from my novel, they're really up and coming. And the guy that runs that is John McElveen, and he's really got his eye on the ball when it comes to innovative fiction, horror fiction. He's doing a real good job. And then the new one is Blue Stars and Other Tales of Darkness. And that's a collection, as I mentioned. And so these stories in this collection go back to the first one I ever wrote to the last one I ever wrote.
Oh, wow.
They're all horror-related. It opens up with a novella called Steel that I wrote a few years ago, and that was published by Books and Booze Press, local press in Connecticut. And it made the transition from local press to this one, which is published by Crossroad Press, which is a fairly huge press out of North Carolina.
Oh, fantastic. Well done.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear more about it. Do you have an excerpt for us, Tony, a reading?
Oh, yeah, I do. This collection, most of it is my later work, even though, like I said, the first story I ever published is in here. And in my later work, I've tried to incorporate a little bit of humor, much like It, the movie It, into it, just to take the either to sharpen the edge or to take the edge off the horror. And the story I'm going to read for you is called Stanley's Hole. And just to give you a background on the story, before I get to the excerpt, the lead character's name is Stanley. And one evening he has a nightmare. And the nightmare is about a hole in the wall. And out of this hole, evil escapes and it winds up destroying the whole world. So he wakes up the next morning. He's had this terrible nightmare. He doesn't know what to do. He winds up going to work. You know, the whole nightmare is still on his mind. And as he's walking into the building, he looks up, and on the side of the building, there's a hole, and it's exactly like the one in his nightmare. So he's panicked. He doesn't know what to do. It's a small hole. And he's looking at it, and he does the only thing he can do, and he sticks his finger in it.
That's not where my mind went, actually, so I'm glad you said
that. That's part of the humor, yeah. So he sticks his finger in it, and all his coworkers see him with his finger stuck in the hole, and they all start making fun of him. But then his boss walks up, and I'll start reading from there. You ready?
Yep.
Yes,
go
sir.
Here we go. What the hell you guys doing out here? Come on, it's 7 o'clock. Get to work. It was Hogwalls. Hogwalls is Stanley's boss. Laughing and jeering, the men left to go punch in, except for Hogwalls, who approached Stanley. What are you doing, Stanley? He asked gruffly. I'm saving the world, boss. How's that, Stanley? Stanley explained the nightmare he had, how when he was walking into the building, he saw the same hole in the wall that he had seen in his dream. Hogwall silently studied Stanley for a moment. Stanley knew he was a good worker, not prone to making excuses when he messed up, and he was not a joking kind of guy. He hoped that Hogwall felt the same way. Hogwall sighed. Softening his tone, he asked him, Stanley, exactly what was it you saw in your nightmare? Stanley gulped. He was reluctant to provide the details, but he realized that if he didn't explain himself, he could be fired. It was bad, boss. Something evil floated out of this hole, so evil that it eventually destroyed the whole world. I know this hole looks small, and it was small in my dream, too, but there was something damn big behind it. It caused snakes to swallow little boys. It made mothers eat their babies. I saw men who worked in a nuclear power plant dumping waste into drinking water supplies. I watched as workers in a sausage factory put pieces of glass into meat. Surgeons were nicking arteries on purpose and then sewing patients back up. Men were having sex with dogs, and the dogs liked it. The expression on his boss's face remained neutral as Stanley recounted his nightmare. But by the end, Hogwall's stare turned hard, giving Stanley hope that he was getting through to him. Stanley concluded, it was like there were waves of evil sweeping across the world, and it all came from this hole. Hogwall's, his hands shaking slightly and his eyes darting back and forth between Stanley and the hole, took a few moments to digest his employee's story. Eventually, his eyes locked on Stanley. Look, Stanley, he said, it's 7:05. How much longer do you have to plug up that hole? Just 5 more minutes, boss. Just give me 5 more minutes. Then I can... Ah! Stanley, what's the matter? Something's got my finger, boss. Ah, it hurts. Hogwalls rushed to the wall and placed his hands on Stanley's arm. No, cried Stanley. You can't take my finger from the hole. Please, no. Boss, leave it there. I'm begging you. Hogwalls stared at Stanley for a moment, then he looked back at the wall. He shook his head and started to address Stanley. You're crazy, Stanley. There's nothing. He stopped speaking in mid-sentence and turned rigid, noticing a small stream of blood mixed with slivers of bone flowing out from the space between Stanley's finger and the hole. He looked at Stanley with terror in his eyes, jumped back and shouted, my God, there is something in there. I told you there was, boss. How much longer do I have? Hogwalls looked at his watch and screamed out the answer. You've got two more minutes, Stanley. You've got to hang on for two more minutes. If Stanley had thought his ride to work this morning was the longest 10 minutes of his life, it was nothing compared to the next two. Behind the wall, something chewed on Stanley's finger. The pressure from the bites was severe, like a vice, continuously tightening and loosening. His bones were pulverized with every crushing chomp, and his nerve endings were aflame. Twice he thought he would pass out, but both times he managed to hang on. How much longer, boss? Stanley asked between gritted teeth. Hogwalls was shaking so hard he had to use his free arm to steady his watch hand. Sweat dripped down from his forehead as he replied in a loud voice, 10 seconds, Stanley. Hang on. He paused and then a countdown. 8 seconds, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's 7:10, Stanley. You can pull your finger out now. Do it now. Despite the agony, Stanley waited a few more seconds before removing his finger from the wall. He had to be sure that all his suffering wasn't in vain because of a timepiece that was off by a few seconds. Satisfied that he'd waited long enough, he pulled his hand back. Though he knew what to expect, the sight caused him to scream. His finger had been chewed off to the second knuckle. Blood poured from the stump. Stanley could see bone and gristle gleaming white at the joints. Terrified, he waved his hands in the air and turned to Hogwalls. Blood hit Hogwalls in the face, but instead of moving out of his way, his boss stood motionless, in shock. That's the end of the excerpt.
You can't stop there. Wow.
There's only 1, 2, 3, 4 more paragraphs to the end of the story. You want me to read it?
Yeah, please. So I'm just really into it. I want to know what happens. Go on.
Okay. Tasting Stanley's blood jolted Hogwalls to his senses. He grabbed Stanley's arm and held it tight. Let's get you inside. Hogwalls' voice was low, reassuring. We need to stop the blood flow, and then we need to get you to the hospital. Led inside the building, Stanley made an effort to calm down and speak to his boss. He looked at Hogwall, staring straight into his eyes, and asked, I did it, boss, didn't I? Hogwalls returned the stare, and then with a smile that betrayed little emotion, he answered Stanley. Yeah, Stanley, you did it. Both men turned a corner, heading to the first aid station nearby. Neither of them could see the pack of dogs lining up, single file, outside in the parking lot. The end.
Oh, that was awesome. I love that. That was very...
Did you like it?
Yeah. That was that reminded me a little bit of Clive Barker from the Books of Blood. It was just sort of surreal and that's what put me in mind of Clive. Early Clive, definitely.
Yeah. Thank you.
The finger chewed off to the second knuckle reminded me, I had a nightmare last night where there was something wrong with the ends of my fingers and I was bleeding out and I knew I was going to die. It was awful.
It's a horrible nightmare.
It was. It really was. So, you got the chewed off fingers and so that's what my brain did. That was really good.
You have some very, very worrying dreams, you really do.
Sometimes.
It sure sounds like you do.
Yeah.
That's what I was wondering when you for any of the horror writers that we have on the show, I always wonder where the ideas come from. We had one author on who it was his nightmares. I mean, he would keep something by his bed so that when he woke up from a nightmare, he could talk into it and talk and say, yeah. So all his stories were nightmares, and so I guess it does make me wonder, because mine would make sense.
This is what I do. This is what I do. When I sit down in front of the computer, I usually have no idea what story I'm going to write. I'll sit down and I'll just start typing, and it could be a scene that I'd seen early in the mornings. I have to travel over a stone bridge to leave town. There may be somebody fishing off that bridge, and I'll look at that, and that'll get me to thinking. And then when I get back to the computer, I'll start writing about that bridge. And what I'll do is I'll start writing about the scenery around the bridge. what I'm trying to do is build an atmosphere. And so I'll write about the plants, the cars, the color of the bridge, you know, the person that was on it. And then I'll start to develop an image of a person, because all horror has to do, it's all personal, you know, it starts to do with people. And then I'll start to develop what kind of person I want to go. Then the story just, it takes off from there. It's like you're being channeled. I'll just write the story and I'll write what's happening, and then it goes. And, you know, if the just to get back to Stanley's Hole, that's exactly what I did. I just said, well, I'm going to have a couple in bed sleeping. And then I would write about the bedroom, what it looked like. And none of that goes into the story. All it's doing is just building that character for me, or build that atmosphere for me. And then once I get the character in bed and I think I know him, I said, ah, he's going to have a dream. So then I start with the dream, and then everything comes in. And in most of my books, there'll be a phrase or something I'll say in the beginning that, or stories I should say, that lead back to the end. So when you get to the end, like in Stanley's Hole, I mentioned the dogs lining up outside. Well, if you remember earlier, I mentioned that in Stanley's dream, there were dogs. Men were screwing dogs or having sex with dogs, and the dogs liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the story, all these dogs are lined up. So what's happened, what, you know, you have to make the connection that it didn't work. You know, Stanley stuck his finger in, nothing happened, and the evil's still coming out, and the dogs are all getting ready to have sex with them.
Yeah, it's funny. It reminds me of a story. I have to look it up, actually, who wrote it, called The Girl Who Trod on a Loaf. And I don't know if you remember that. It was like it was a grim fairy tale or whatever. And it was literally a girl who walked through the forest, and there was a muddy puddle, and to get over it, she put a loaf of bread down for some reason and stepped on it. And then she sank, and she sank slowly into this sort of mud. And it's pretty, look it up, it's pretty horrific. I don't know all these years. I remember reading it in some, you know, some monster story book back in, you know, middle school when I was like 9 or 10. It reminds me of that. That was just so surreal. This girl was, she's a cruel girl who, you know, brings off flies and that sort of thing. And at the end, all the windless flies were crawling all over. And so, look it up. I mean, the girl who can all laugh. It's a very, very disturbing children's story. You know, I thought it was just a cautionary tale about, you know, not trying on leavened goods. But I think there's probably more to it than that.
People our age really got their love from horror from either folk tales or the Bible, you know, one of the two, or both. You know, as, you know, nowadays, or I shouldn't say nowadays, but in the last few years, you had, you know, the giants out there. You mentioned Clive Barker, Stephen King, Peter Straub, you know, they kind of took over from those old, you don't hear those old folk tales. People are reading modern horror now.
Well, I was brought up before, I remember Freeliber, and then, you know, the classics, Bram Stoker, and, you know, a lot of the pulpy sort of people, Lovecraft, obviously, you know, and that's where I think a lot of modern horror roots lie, definitely. And like you said, that's what we were brought up on, which I think is a good grounding.
Yep.
You know,
what I found interesting...
when you were talking about building your character and writing, you know, the setting up the scene, but actually not using that, you know, and I find that with a lot of short stories, that is the problem I have with them, is that when I'm reading them, I can't connect to the character because they have not made them real. And maybe it's because they're not even real to who is writing them. I mean, when you're writing short stories, you know.
Exactly.
So I have to say that
and people, characterization is probably the most important part of a story. You know, more so than plot, because if you don't care about the character, you don't care what happens to him.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
I find that even with like TV shows. I mean, you know, I was a huge fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but it wasn't even about the vampires anymore. It was about the people, you know? And
yeah.
I'm very much into the characters. And You know, and I guess that's another interesting thing is that, and I've said this before on the show, I do not understand how a writer can write stuff and then decide to cut it. Yeah, that doesn't go in. That doesn't. I'm like, why? But, you know, then again, there's sometimes as, you know, when I'm editing, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have to cut this. So, I mean, I guess I can understand how, you know, you can do it if you're not if you have objectives. But, I mean, I as far as myself writing, I have never been able to cut anything. So I don't understand how. I know. Like, if I'm writing
That's why
it,
they have editors.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know what, I guess I can, maybe I shouldn't be so harsh on the writers I edit.
Well, I've been in that situation where, you know, you find, I mean, everybody who writes, you know, you get to a point, usually early on, where it starts to take a life of its own and go in its own direction, you know, it's guided, it goes in its own direction, the characters pop to life and become people. And I've said this before, there's been times, you know, I'll sit there, I wonder what so-and-so's doing now, and then, oh, no, I made him up. You know, he's not real, Jim.
Yeah.
But sometimes that happens, and you find you have to cut bits out that you wrote certainly earlier on because they just don't fit anymore because the story has changed, it's developed organically, and suddenly that bit, it could, and it's always some of the best stuff you've written as well. You know, it's absolute beautiful prose. And you think, it's great. I'd love to keep it in, but it just doesn't fit anymore. Can I? Oh, maybe I can put it in another book. And you never can. You never ever can.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I understand.
Characters who you know, we want to know. I still wonder, James, how Colton's doing in his dream world. You know, how he's faring.
So do I. We need to revisit Colton. Yeah.
Yes,
bizarre little world. Yeah. I mean, did you get most attached to your characters, Tony?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I do. The first book I ever wrote, it's never been published and it never will be. But it's a long book. I think it was around 100,000 words. But at the end, you kill your darlings. I wound up killing the young girl that was the protagonist. And I actually had tears in my eyes. I was typing. I mean, you don't do it in short stories, obviously, but when you write a novel and you spend so much time, you spend months and years with a character, you know them. They're part of you. And if if they're really nice people, you can't help but miss them. That's why people like sequels.
Yeah.
It's like revisiting old friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I always say, you know, the mark of a good book is you get to the end, you're disappointed that you've got that it's finished. You know, and you that's the thing with a book, because you see you get fewer and fewer pages, and you just got this sinking feeling that I just don't want this end because, like you say, I'm going to be parting company with these fantastic people.
Yeah.
And that is a mark of a terrific book, you know.
It is. And on that note, I think I have to say that it's about time for our first segment to be over. I know it's awful. Next time we have you on, and I say next time, so that means that you don't have really any choice in the matter. So next time we have you on the show. I know. We want more reading, and I'll have you on for the whole entire show next time, and we'll just sit and, you know, chat about books and movies. Geez. I have so much fun. I know. Don't tease.
I'll be happy to.
Where can we find you online?
If you go on Google or any of the search engines, just type Tony Tremblay author. There's Tony Tremblay's like the French Smith. There's 1,000 of us, millions of us. If you type Tony Tremblay author, you'll come to my webpage. And you can always find me on Facebook. I'm there, and I do a lot of writing on Facebook, so hopefully you'll enjoy some of the posts I make.
Fantastic. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been
Tony.
My pleasure also. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Have a great rest of
your
day, Tony. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, yeah, it's break time. I'm going to go for a week. now, so we'll be right back.
Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Down, 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 down.
Welcome back to part two.
Well, 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 we's back. That was like the world's longest song, I think.
But it's a good one, and I just have flashbacks of what movie? The Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
It was.
I actually saw that relatively recently.
Really?
Because it was on, you know, one of the few 80s movies that I never saw. Because in the 80s, I was busy watching horror. You know, it was the golden age of horror and schlock horror and all of that. And I didn't, Pretty in Pink and all that. I just, no. And I sort of watched them later in life. But Breakfast Club was a brilliant film. You know, again, we were talking earlier about writing good characters, and it was really just about a bunch of kids, you know, but the depth that they gave the characters, you know, was incredible, you know, which is why it's lauded as a fine movie. Mm-hmm. If somebody said now, hey, you know, instead of making a Marvel stroke DC fucking reboot or remaking another Stephen King movie or another fucking Rambo, you know, I was just going to make this film about a bunch of kids who were in detention. You know, and the executive. So when do the dinosaurs? There's no dinosaurs. We've got Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis is in the air ducts coming to bust them. No, it's just kids, and they're in detention. It would never get made today. It would never get made, which is sad because there's some great. Somebody greenlit Sharknado 5. To be fair, the first few Sharknado films were brilliant because they were just for what they were. They were probably the closest homage to the 1980s schlock. And obviously, we're great friends with Brett McCormick, who's edited and compiled a bunch of books, and we've just signed one, his latest novel, actually. Replicator, and he made some fantastic schlock horror movies in the 80s, and I think Sharknado is probably the homage to that, but to be fair, they're shite, to be honest. You know, the effects are terrible, the premise is bad, the acting's appalling, it's just... But it's just so bad, it's good. You know what I mean?
I hear that all the time, but to me, it's just bad. You know, I can't even say it's so bad, it's good. To me, it's just bad.
Because, Christina, because you have no soul. I think we've sort of ascertained that fact.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that.
So,
but...
anyway, I'm going to put you on the spot again here.
Oh, God.
With that one, I'm not. Not with that.
Into a wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a distance and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on? And I say,
Stina, indeed, what is going on?
You know, I know one thing with Hellbound. We have a new book coming out. It's tomorrow. So. Yes, yay!
And yes, we do have a new book coming out. Do tell.
Really? I know who it's by, but I'm not sure what it's called. it's by Nikki Freeman.
Nikki Freeman, and it's called Tremble, and it is a phenomenal paranormal horror, and it's an incredible book. It's her first, and it is outstanding. And yes, it is. It's not actually available. The official launch date is tomorrow, but it is available now in paperback and ebook and one you pull your finger out, an audio book as well.
I was going to say, I'll be working on the getting it up there on ACX really soon.
We will be having Nikki on the show shortly to talk about Tremble.
Definitely.
And I remember when it popped into my inbox, and you know, and it was sort of three quarters of the way down a long, long list of dreck. I just about lost the will to live, and I clicked on that and but just totally expecting it to hate it, and it was like, wow, it was like dropping ice down my wife front. So it was really refreshing.
Nice.
And just for the record, I don't wear wife fronts. I very rarely wear underwear these days, to be honest with you, but I don't go out much. There's no point.
Right.
No point creating laundry if I don't go anywhere, is there? So there's that.
No, we actually have a lot of good books in the works right now. I know that I just finished up editing one that I just thought was amazing, and I can't wait to
get that. Spells in Therapy.
Actually, one right before that I was talking about Highway 20. I was really, really super impressed by that. I really was. You know, it's funny because we read so much, but it's not, you know, not every book can we go, wow, that was amazing. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's ones where like, that was good, that was great, but,
I think to be fair now, you know, if they don't make us go, wow, that's great, we don't publish them.
Well, right. No, definitely, so definitely. But I do think there are definitely, you know, ones that other, you know, like maybe you'll like something a little bit better than I will, or I'll like something better than you will, or, you know, because we don't have the same taste in things. And I think that sometimes when it comes to being a submission.
There's been the odd time. There was one recently where I bounced it across you because I could tell it was good, but it wasn't my cup of tea.
Right.
Just wanted, it's like you say, you know, which is why we make such a great team, because, you know, I mean, some I will just, you know, if it's just badly written, it just, no, I'm just not even going to.
Right.
No.
Right.
No. But, and of course, we got our hard paper copies of The Toilet Zone. They turned up this week. And what a phenomenal, we need to get Brett on, actually, Brett McCormick, who compiled and edited it for us. What a phenomenal, phenomenal book. I mean, it's just like,
it looks so good.
Wow.
Yeah.
And everybody loves Tremis. It's just, and again, you know, it's no word of a lie. Every story is scientifically calculated to last for the length of an average length of a sit down on the toilet. So it's just
That's great. Yeah. No, it looks so good. I mean, it really does. The cover, the back, it's great. I did not go through the submissions. I didn't, you know, I didn't really have a whole lot to do with it. But I do remember I was the one who you know, sent out the acceptance letters. And so every story, I was like, I remember that one. And I don't know. It just looks, it looks really good.
There's some terrific stories
prouder.
In it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, Brett turned down some terrific stories because we just could not fit them all in.
Yeah.
So
I
wholeheartedly anticipate there's going to be a Toilet Zone 2, probably next year.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a must. It has to be.
Definitely, yeah.
But anywho, we digress. So with all this talk of toilets. I'm going to let you introduce our second guest, Xtina.
Our second guest.
If you want, it's up to you.
Please,
you know, feel free to join in.
Our second guest is audiobook narrator Chris Harbour. Woo!
Good evening, Chris.
I'm glad I got the same applause as the first guy.
Of course, of course. So the studio audience, they love everyone. Absolutely.
Good.
God bless them. So it's great. I mean, obviously, I've heard your voice is very familiar, but it's nice to get to meet you. Nice to get to meet you.
Yeah.
How are you this evening, sir?
Pretty good. I'm hanging out in a hotel room in Denver, Colorado.
Nice.
Dare we ask why? And is there hookers involved?
Not yet. And I'm on a business trip.
Oh, wow. I've got some phone numbers if you're interested.
After the show, you need to shoot me a text.
Yeah, I'll drop you a text. And so this is your day job business trip, or?
I'm doing some temp work for helping my brother out.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, again, we're a bit of a departure for us. Chris is a, how would you describe it? So a voiceover artist or a narrator or?
Just audiobook narrator. I haven't really done anything like commercial or anything with other things with voiceover.
So, I mean, you've got a terrific voice. I mean, is that just?
Thank you.
You just like. Well, if you didn't have a terrific voice, you wouldn't be narrating our book for a start. So there's that. What on earth? What got you into narrating audiobooks?
Well, I'm a voracious reader of sorts. So, like, you know, I'll read like a couple hundred page book, that's words, in like a day, just because I just roll through them. And eventually started listening to audiobooks. And as so many things happened, my wife made an offhanded comment about like, oh, you'd be good at something like that. And whenever she mentions something, I tend to get obsessive about it. I'm like, I could do that. You're completely right. And from there, I just started Googling and trying to figure out, like, how do people actually become audiobook narrators? And I found a video on YouTube, funny enough, by Sean Allen Pratt called So You Want to Be an Audiobook Narrator. And in it, he basically says, stare at a wall and read a book out loud for 2 hours a day for 2 weeks.
Wow.
So.
You put it like that, I say it sounds terrible.
if you like reading, it's not too bad. Mm-hmm. Just because it's like when I read, it's a movie plays in my head. Mm-hmm. So eventually, like, I don't see the words anymore or anything like that.
You know, it does that to me as well when I'm reading, like, you know, a book, when I'm reading to myself. But when I go to read out loud, I'm awful at it. I really am.
Yes, you are. She is, Chris.
I've done
terrible.
It a few times on the show, and I get going really fast, and then nobody can understand me, and I'm not taking breaths. And by the time I'm done, I'm, like, dizzy and out of breath. It's just like, yeah, so... I have to say, I listen to the audiobooks and the files and stuff that come in, it's a lot of work. I mean, when you're listening to it, it sounds so so natural. It really does. But just reading a couple paragraphs on the show sometimes, I'm like, man, that's a lot of work. So I have to say, I think and you are. I hate to say this because we have a lot of books up on audio right now, but I think you're my favorite narrator.
Oh,
and I know that there are times I will be working on a book and I'm like, oh, I gotta get Chris to do this. I gotta, and then I have to go, oh my gosh, I hope the author likes Chris as much as I do because, you know,
right.
I'll have to be like, trying to, you know, sugarcoat it and because I really do. And you actually narrated one of my favorite Hellbound books, Blood in the Woods. And it was a good story. I read the book. And then when you narrated it, I was the one who listened through it. And me and the boyfriend both, he was listening with me. And I know that I think he was busy the last couple of days that I listened through it, and he was really upset because he didn't get to finish the book. So
you listened to it without me? How could you?
Exactly. I'm like, well, I had to get it done, that was a really good story. Now, do you like to do you read horror, or do you pretty much read anything?
So I like personal reading or like professional reading?
Well, personal, I was asking first.
Kind of both. So generally speaking, I'm a giant nerd. So I'm a big fan of like fantasy, the new it's the newer lit RPG genre. I'm a fan of that, and mostly fantasy because I'm a nerd.
but
professionally, yeah, I'll everything. I didn't actually realize so. Through narrating for Hellbound, I became more of a fan of horror books. Because, honestly, I'm not. My first experience with like horror movies and that whatnot was watching Freddy Krueger while learning that my dad has sleep apnea on the couch behind me. So I'm watching people die in their dreams, and my dad's behind me like,
oh my god,
what is happening right now?
Oh my gosh. You know, I have to say that, when I was listening to the audio, I have to say anybody who's listening out there, if they, need something, a book narrated or, any publishers listening, Chris is great. I know that when I was listening to it, there came a part in the book where in Blood in the Woods, where the two boys are, I think they're like skipping down the road and they're singing this made up song that, they made up, and it's just, Chris just gave it all he had. I mean, you were there with those boys.
Was it the rap song?
I'm thinking if I had to do that part, if I was reading that, I would have just read it. I would not have, but no, it was great. I was like, this is awesome.
So they talked about the group that they emulated, and I didn't know who they were until I spent a little more than is necessary time. Like, okay, so this is the band. This is what they're doing. Okay, so how's that? Okay, I can get that rhythm. Okay, I can try. And I listened to it back, and I was like, that sounds like two like 8-year-old kids trying to. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it did. It
excellent.
Was great.
Dedication
oh my gosh.
To the art.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. I think that was great. You said you read like a book a day. I mean, I wish I had time to do that now. I really do.
Well, I used to. So now it's like I have a job as an EMT, so I get some time there to read. And then it's mostly the book a day was like, that was back when I could do that. That was in high school. I could do that. And then when I got out of high school, I joined the military, and I started finding, like, I didn't want to read anything under 1,000 pages.
Wow.
Because I was doing what, we're talking about earlier, where you, like, fall in love with the characters, and I was so upset every time I finish a book. I'm like, I just need longer books.
Yeah. So. Or a series. Yeah, series are good, too. But, when I was younger, I remember doing that. I'd go to the bookstore, and it would be a toss-up. If there, if I was like, I wonder if I should get this and this. Whatever one was longer, I wanted that one. You got to
get it. I was the same, because I was being a fast reader, and I would go. That's why I ended up getting on Stephen King, actually. One of the first King books I got was The Stand, simply because it was a big, fat book. I remember when Christine came out, I was actually at university, and I actually took to my bed for 2 days. I missed all my lectures and everything, and just sat in bed and read Christine for 2 days solid. Was a great book.
No regrets.
No. Not at all. No.
It was good. Yeah. Yesterday, day before, I think there was a new Stephen King book that came out. I mean, I can't remember.
The Institute, yeah.
Yeah. It sounds interesting. To be honest, I looked at the price. I'm like, the Kindle book, wow. For a couple more dollars, I can just get the freaking hardcover. So I might, go with that one. But, it's funny. I was reading the reviews, and most of them are pretty well. And this was when it first came out, so I think there was like 5 at that time, and most of them were really good reviews. And then the last one was like, I ordered this because I needed to review it for whatever it was, and it was dented, so they gave it like a 1-star because the book was dented.
Oh, seriously? Oh no!
Yes.
Perfect. Love those 1-stars.
No.
Because the book was dented. Yeah, like didn't see anything. He hadn't even read it yet because it was for his, you know, show for the review. But, so I was like, oh, man. I mean, this is what our, you know, this is what our authors go through. I mean, people can get mad at anything. I think, James, you had a reviewer get mad because there was sex in your book.
Yeah, because it got, on the front cover, I've actually got it here. I'm going to read it out. It said, skin crawling, gut wrenching, nerve shredding, sexy roller coaster of a novel. I had someone complain about Flanagan, funnily enough. For all the things in that, they complained that I used big words.
Right.
They should listen to Satanic Panic.
Oh, yes. There's a book. Did you enjoy that one, Chris?
That one, I had a good talk with the wife about coming up with a pseudonym.
Oh, really?
Because I was like, oh, my dad listens to all my books. I was like, I don't know if I can.
God.
I just got to talk to him. Don't listen to this book.
I suppose in your defense, you didn't write it, so you're just, you know.
Yeah.
I am but an instrument.
Exactly.
I was
actually
wondering if there's anything that you won't narrate, because I know that I believe it was Blood in the Woods, but we had a couple people turn down because of a couple of scenes, which, you know, to be honest, you know, I read them, James read them, and I didn't think they were, you know, I couldn't understand why somebody would turn it down, to be honest. I mean, it's a horror novel, and it's set in the 80s when they did have the, you know, which we just mentioned the name of Satanic Panic, but I mean, the panic over that kind of stuff, and you know, I thought that the scenes, you know, were needed. They were necessary, and they weren't at all gratuitous or anything. So, I mean, is there anything that you won't narrate? Anything that you will, you know, nope, I can't do that?
That's very much like a book-by-book basis. But I think I spoke with you about those scenes, and because if it goes in line with the story, and if it fits with the story, and if it doesn't, fetishize it or any kind of like assault or anything like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't kind of pump up its own ego because this is in the book, then that's too much for me. Like, no, like that's, you know, bad for bad sake, and it doesn't, it's not scary. It's just gross.
Right. Mm-hmm. And with Blood in the Woods, it was based on, I mean, loosely based on, but, you know, incidents that actually, you know, did happen in this town. And so, you know, that was kind of like, you know, hey, you can't really cut out something that, you know, it's kind of important, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so long as it doesn't
fetishize
it and at this. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right.
So I was going to say I mean, one of the scenes I did actually, I spoke to the author. I spoke to Joe, and so we do need to. It was edging a little bit towards gratuitous, you know, and just said, well, we need to edit it a little bit more, you know. And obviously, you know, Joe was okay with that, and we did, and it worked very well, like you say. It was part of the story, you know. It wasn't in there for its own sake, for shock's sake, or titillation.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Sort of
like the shock horror, I'm just not into that. Like, oh yeah, a bunch of this terrible stuff happens for no reason. Like, sweet, you can go with that. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Although, you know, and then you know, we had Satanic Panic, which you know, to me, I just see total 80s slasher film, and that's what I see with Satanic Panic. Yeah,
I think that's what appealed to me about that, because it again, through, you know, filming in the 80s, it took me right back to, I mean, we had the slasher, but we had the pulp schlock books as well, you know, the early James Herbert, the Guy and Smiths, and all the, you know, the ones that followed in their footsteps, you know, that was literally gore for gore's sake, and then they throw some sex in, and that was the end of the book, you know. And we loved them, you know, at that age. It was like, this is fantastic, you know. It was everything we wanted in a book. We didn't need plot and character development. We just wanted people getting by things and having sex, and then getting eaten by things while they were having sex. Yeah.
Yes.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. That's classic Jason.
Yes, it is.
Classic Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Satanic Panic was good because I felt like, of course, like while I was reading it and everything, it was like, oh, like there's kind of two plot lines, like these people that are
mm-hmm.
discovering like a relationship
yeah.
that is out of the norm. And then at the same mm-hmm. time, there's somebody else who's really plotting something out of the norm. And so I was like, oh, like the kind of the intertwining and then they intersect. And you're like, okay, that's, oh, all right.
Yeah.
That was, like the twist in the end, I reading it was just like, holy crap.
Yes,
and immediately,
yes,
I that's when I emailed you, and I was like, hey, for this twist, can I do this?
I remember, yeah, no, definitely, working on it, you know, and reading it as well, I was the same way. You get to that part, and you're like, whoa, where did that come from? You know, because I think that a lot of times now, I can kind of see things coming, and we've
mm-hmm.
had, actually, Hellbound's had a couple of books recently that have such a James, what is it called, the one with the mirror in the title, mirror, the other side of the mirror,
the other side of the mirror
the plot twist in that one, holy crap, I think I actually said holy shit out loud when I was, you know, so yeah that was great. And I love that. I do. I love the, especially, I mean, you know, there's sometimes you're reading and you don't even think there's going to be a plot twist. You're just reading a story. And then
mm-hmm.
I think those, you know, there's sometimes you can read one and you're like, okay, I know they're going to do something weird and, you know, you're kind of prepared for it. But I was not prepared for it in either one of those books. I really, you know, as a matter of fact, in Satanic Panic, when I was reading it, I was just thinking, you know, it was like the killer is just going to show up and hack everybody. You know, that's
yeah.
what I thought we're getting at. And then when you have a twist, you're like, what? Where did that come from?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I like that. It was like gearing you towards. It was very obvious. Like, hey, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, not exactly.
Yes. It was great. It was. What are you working on right now?
Right now I am finishing up two books. One is a young adult novel
mm-hmm.
called The Last Ride of the Small Town Superhero. And then there's a Christian fantasy book that I'm finishing up called Dragons of Hypoborea.
Wow.
And then from
you
there,
do.
Do I?
Yeah, you do like everything. Any genre, that's kind of cool.
I've had coaching and everything, and one of the things is like if I want to make this a career, which I'm hoping to do eventually, I can't mm-hmm. stick to one genre. So like you get people who are super well known in like fantasy, and I listen to them all the time, and then I look at their profile and they have a bunch of romance, and you're like, that doesn't equate at all. But it's, you know, there's some books that are like, oh yeah, like these they sell really well. These are more like passion projects.
I hate to say this because it feels like we just started talking, but we are out of time for our show.
Oh, no.
And I know I have to ask, you know, well, no, I'm not even going to ask. The next time we have you on,
okay.
We will have a clip that we'll play to
upload it. I don't know. I think it's the software's been having issues today, so we will play that next time.
Okay,
yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely.
Then maybe
so,
next time I'll have a few more books for you to pick through.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Hopefully.
So thank you so much, Chris, for being on the show. And
no
I
problem at all. I enjoyed it.
It's been an absolute pleasure to finally get to meet you, Chris.
Thank you. You as well.
Okay, and enjoy the hotel room and the hookers.
Yeah, I'll send you my number.
Yeah, no problem. I'll send you a few numbers. No problem.
I don't like this joke.
Oh dear. Yeah, Chris's wife. We are joking. Okay.
You feel buzzing already.
Just going to think I'm just totally lied now. So. Sorry about that, Chris.
No problem at all.
We'll catch up with you next time. And I'm afraid it is that time, Xtina. We have to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Good night.
the stars, I watch the sun. Now I watch for anyone, but it's only make believe. You work,
work, work,
you work, you work so hard.
Crash upon the sand.
Another place.